You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
School of Humans.
So this episode is very dirty. I mean, I know most of the episodes are dirty, but this one has a lot of very explicit language used in it. And so this is just a fair warning to, you know, probably don't listen to this in front of a small child or at work unless you have a cool job. But let's get into it. Welcome to American Filth. Hey, filth heads, and happy Valentine's Day. To really get you in the mood for today, you know, this day of love and sensuality and lovemaking, I'm going to read you some lyrics. I'm going to do it in a very dramatic, poetic sort of way. All right, here are the lyrics. I got nipples on my titties, big as the end of my thumb. I got something between my legs that'll make a dead man come. Oh, daddy, baby, won't you shave them dry? Now, draw it out. Want you to grind me, baby, grind me until I cry. This is from a song that came out almost 90 years ago in 1935 called A Shave 'Em Dry. And let me tell you, this was not the only song like this that came out. In the 1920s and the 1930s, there are some folks saying some nasty shit. And we're going to learn about it today. Cue the theme song. This is American Filth, and I'm Gabby Watts. Every week I tell you a filthy story from American history. And today's episode, The Dirty, Dirty Blues. Okay, so that song that we heard was called Shave 'Em Dry, and it was recorded by Lucille Bogan under her pseudonym Bessie Jackson. And the funny thing about those are just the opening lines of the song, you know? Like, she doesn't even warm you up or, like, ease you into it. And in the context of this X-rated song, it's probably just about getting right to the banging without bothering with all that pesky foreplay. And some of y'all might be thinking right now, wow, Gabby, it's so fun to hear you recite these lyrics in a very poetic, dramatic sort of way. But why don't you just play the song? Well, here's the thing. Songs require licensing, which requires money, and I just can't afford it right now. But I do encourage you, go listen to Lucille Bogan. Go listen to her music. It's freaking fantastic. In the meantime, though, let's hear some other lyrics from Shave 'Em Dry. Say I fucked all night and all the night before, baby, and how I feel just like I wanna fuck some more. And here's another excerpt from the song. Now if fucking was the thing that would take me to heaven, I'd be fucking in the studio till the clock strike 11. Do you guys remember when WAP came out and all these conservatives were in a tizzy over the lyrics? Well, imagine if they had heard Lucille Bogan singing this in 1935. Another song that Bogan wrote was called Till the Cows Come Home, and it is just as vulgar in its lyrics. The general premise of the song is that Bogan can fuck until the cows come home. The song opens with Bogan saying that every time she bangs a man, she gives them, quote, the doggone clap. And here she does not mean the STD. What she actually means, as she explains in the song, that's the kind of pussy that they really like. So that's a good one you guys could use tonight for Valentine's Day. You know, you'd be like, hey, partner, or hey, random person, I'm going to give you the clap tonight. And they'll be like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't want the clap. It's like, no, it's like you're going to clap for it. You're going to give it a standing ovation. Anyway, later in that song, she says, if you suck my pussy, baby, I'll suck your dick. I'll do it, ya honey, till I make you shit. Oh, baby, honey, do it all night long. Do it to me, papa, till tomorrow comes. Look, even tomorrow is coming in these lyrics. Amazing. And I really respect this because Bogan is not even doing innuendo. She's just going for it, crooning about how much she loves sex. So much that it'll make her partner shit. So Lucille Bogan, she's considered the queen of the dirty blues, but these were just a few of the many, many, many songs that she wrote and recorded. So who is this lady just brazenly singing about boning in the 1930s? Well, she was born Lucille Anderson just before the turn of the century on April 1st, 1897. And there are conflicting records about where she was born. It was either Mississippi or Alabama. And there's really not a whole lot known about her early years. But when she was 17, she married this guy named Nazareth Lee Bogan. He was a railway man who already had a daughter. But a year or two into their marriage, she gave birth to a son of her own. She and Nazareth later divorced, and she remarried, but she kept Bogan as her name. And what is known about her life is mostly about her career as a singer. She's among the first blues musicians to ever be recorded, alongside legends like Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey. The first tunes Bogan laid on wax were actually vaudeville songs that she recorded in New York in 1923, and she did this with OK Records. Later that same year, Bogan made music history when OK's Ralph Peer came down to the South to record a country, blues, jazz, and gospel artist in a converted warehouse in downtown Atlanta, Georgia. On this trip, not only did Peer record country music's first genuine hit by Fiddlin' John Carson, but this session made Bogan the first black blues singer to be recorded outside of the big cities of New York and Chicago. And here's a very fun fact. The building where they recorded this music, where a very significant moment in music history took place, it was actually torn down a few years ago to make room for something even more important, a Margaritaville. History's dumb. Don't preserve it. Anyway, while coming up in the music scene in the 20s, Bogan is also hanging out and performing in some pretty seedy juke joints. And these kinds of places, well, they welcome the dirty, nasty lyrics Bogan became known for. So heading into the 1930s, a lot of the stuff that Bogan's writing start to take on filthy, risque topics like drinking and sex and prostitution. You know, she has that song Till the Cows Come Home, but she has other ones called Sloppy Drunk Blues and Tricks Ain't Walkin' No More. And the thing about Bogan is that over the years, she was known to have affairs with both men and women. Wow, a bisexual queen. And her queerness starts being reflected in her music. Like she has this one song called BD Woman's Blues. And that BD apparently stands for either bull dagger or bull dyke. Both terms that mean butch lesbian. And here's this song. Coming a time, BD women ain't gonna need no men. Coming a time, beady women ain't gonna need no men. Oh, the way treat us is a low down and dirty sin.
Beady women you sure can't understand. Beady women you sure can't understand. They got a head like a sweet angel, and they walk just like a natural man.
While it may seem that Bogan's just a smutty outlier here, she's actually not alone. There's a whole cohort of blues singers who were known for being sexually adventurous. I mean, if we're talking about women and sexuality and being pretty bold with your lyrics, we can't leave out Ma Rainey, the mother of the blues. You know, she also, like Bogan, bridged vaudeville and the blues, connecting this new musical style to the earlier sexualized space of the vaudeville houses. I mean, just imagine it. There was provocative dancing and suggestive singing. That was just part of it. And the thing about Ma Rainey is, you know, her sexuality. Some people think she could have been bisexual. Maybe she was a lesbian. She took on many female lovers despite being married to a man. There was even rumors that she had some kind of sexual or romantic relationship with fellow musician and her protege, Bessie Smith. Yeah, Ma Rainey, she definitely loved women. Like in 1925, the Chicago police arrested her at her home for hosting a so-called lesbian party. It's records like this arrest that help support theories that a number of Ma Rainey's songs allude to her lesbian leanings, like these famous lines in 1928's Prove It On Me Blues.
I went out last night with a crowd of my friends. It must have been women, because I don't like no men. Wear my clothes just like a fan. Talk to the gals just like any old man.
And a few years earlier, in 1924, Ma Rainey recorded another song that hints at her queerness. In the lyrics, she describes a woman who is wearing men's shoes. And at the time, you know, they were men's shoes, and most women wouldn't be caught dead in them unless she was A, cross-dressing, or B, gay. And that 1924 song, that was also Shave 'em Dry Blues. That's right, Lucille Bogan's infamous 1935 recording was actually a modified cover, or at least inspired by, Ma Rainey's tune from more than a decade earlier. And actually, on that day, March 5th, 1935, Bogan recorded two versions of Shave 'em Dry. There's the super vulgar one you heard earlier, and then there's a cleaned-up version that is way more tame and marketable. And that cleaned-up version was the song released and distributed by Bogan's record label, the banner labeled of the American Record Corporation. And believe it or not, these naughty, slightly suggestive tunes weren't just some random dirty songs that slipped through the cracks. No, 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 no. There was actually a whole genre of sexually suggestive, if not outright explicit, blues music that actually, despite its erotic subject matter, held broad commercial appeal. It was called Hokum Blues. More on that after these soothing advertisements.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days. Like, literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad-spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50. And it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Welcome back from the soothing advertisements. I'm going to introduce a new person. His name is Thomas A. Dorsey. These days, he's known as the father of gospel music, and he's been inducted into both the Songwriters and the Gospel Hall of Fame. He's been recorded and covered by musicians like B.B. King, to Little Richard, to Aretha Franklin, even Elvis Presley. And that's not necessarily because of his long career in gospel music. No, no. Back in the late 1920s, Thomas A. Dorsey was known as Georgia Tom, and he was a pioneer of the genre known as Hokum Blues. And by the 1920s, by the way, Dorsey was a well-established performer. He was born in Villa Rica, Georgia, but his family moved to Atlanta when he was a child. There, he began working part-time at a local theater, which is where he learned to play the piano. According to the Songwriters Hall of Fame, by the time Dorsey was 12, he was performing at the barrel houses and brothels of Atlanta's Decatur Street. Some years later, he moved to Chicago, and it was there that he served, for at least some time, as none other than Ma Rainey's band leader. He was also a piano player, arranger, and vocal coach at Paramount Records. He just dove headfirst into Chicago's music scene. Then he meets a guy named Hudson Whitaker, who went by the name of Tampa Red. He was a musician who played parties and did some street performing for money, and the two of them started playing together. While classic blues singers like Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey performed at the vaudeville houses, the majority of blues musicians at the time tended to perform at late-night spots like speakeasies, after-hours cafes, and parties. And this was pretty cool, but according to Dorsey, it was actually possible to make a living performing at these parties. You know, when one party ended, the musicians could move on to the next gathering and just keep going. A lot of these places, they offered pretty low rents to the people who were moving to the major cities every week. A lot of the people moving were Black Southerners who were fleeing the Jim Crow South. This is part of what would come to be known as the Great Migration. And so, since you had all of these Black Southerners moving up north, there was a desire for some Southern-type music. You know, so at these parties, the music that people wanted to hear was stuff that you might hear at a weekend shindig in the South. So this music came to be known as city blues. You know, it was something you could dance to, but it also had very LOL lyrics. And the thing is, you might be wondering, oh, I didn't think that in the rural South, in the countryside, that people would be singing suggestive songs. But apparently, people had been doing that for a long time. In fact, more than a decade before Ma Rainey came up with Shave 'Em Dry, in 1912, Black vaudeville performer Paul Carter put it this way to a news publication. He said, "Smutty sayings and suggestive dancing were already common in Black vaudeville, and the audiences loved things with a double meaning." So yeah, this raunchy art form was already very popular and tons of fun. And at night, with lots of drinking and dancing, it made sense to have some smut and vulgarity. But certainly this wasn't something you would record and distribute for money, right? No, wrong. Because now in the 20th century, with the growth of the music industry, there were a lot of people who were hungry to record music. Particularly, like when Ralph Peer came down to Atlanta, he was really focused on what was then known as race records, or in general, Black music. And then when we got to the 1920s, people had record players, and this boosted the popularity of genres like jazz, blues, and what was then called hillbilly music, what we'd call country today. So, you know, some of these record producers, they had this idea. They're like, well, if we take the city blues songs that are so popular, take out some of the inappropriate words, maybe have even more obscure innuendos, voila, then we can make a hit. Which brings us back to Dorsey and Whitaker. In 1928, the two of them were trying to make a hit song, but unfortunately, they were having some writer's block. But then one day, they're just hanging out and inspiration strikes. Basically what happened is that they were just sitting around trying to think up a song. And then a boy comes by and he's like, hey, everybody in the street is saying it's tight like that. Maybe you should make a song about that. And then Dorsey and Whitaker were like, that's a great idea. So they wrote a song called It's Tight Like That. Whitaker wrote the lyrics and Dorsey was in charge of the tune. And yes, the tune is very similar to this 1925 song called Shake That Thing by Papa Charlie Jackson. But whatever. That was a hit. Dorsey made some tweaks. Whatever. And so in Tight Like That, the lyrics are suggestive, but not necessarily outright dirty, filthy, gross. They actually used a lot of slang used by black people at the time, so they never directly said any of the bad words, taboo topics. One term that you might hear at a late night dance club was Beetle on Bum, which Dorsey explained was a suggestive phrase that women would sing while dancing with their dudes. The lyrics are, Uncle Bill came home about 10:30, put the key in the hole, but he couldn't get in. Oh, it's tight like that. What could that mean? Beep up bum bum, oh, it's tight like that. Beetle on bum, you hear me talking to ya, I mean it's tight like that. So, you know, suggestive but not explicit. And as many songs in the hokum blues genre would do later, you could further modify it. Like, you could also just, like, not say tight. Instead, sometimes it would be replaced with it or that thing. And so people who were listening to it, if they weren't good at, like, innuendo or didn't know the words, you couldn't be offended. Like, maybe in the song, you know, the key was just literally too fat for that lock. I don't know. And It's Tight Like That became a huge hit. By 1929, 500,000 records had been sold. The Songwriters Hall of Fame thinks that the song ultimately sold 7 million recordings, which was a record for the blues era. And also, Whitaker and Dorsey kept recording new versions with different lyrics or a new band name. Like, they did one version that they recorded with a jug band, and they called it Tampa Red's Hokum Jug Band. And as for the word hokum, they included it because of the word's roots in vaudeville. It was already a term used to describe a show or performance that bordered on vulgarity, sort of a low comedic style, like double entendre. This basically let their audience, at least the ones who were in the know, understand what they were really getting at. And unsurprisingly, because of this song's success, other groups began recording covers of It's Tight Like That or just ripped the song off completely. And it was so popular that people were eating this shit up. They're like, yes, give me more It's Tight Like That. Like, even preachers recorded sermons that had similar names. Like, this is crazy, but there was a dude who had a sermon that was called These Hard Times Are Tight Like That. So the popularity of this song and others led to a rush of hokum blues hits in the 20s and 30s. That had some really excellent titles, like What Is It That Tastes Like Gravy by Whitaker? Or Meatballs by Lil Johnson? Or Bo Carter's Please Warm My Wiener? That last one, not super subtle. And while a lot of people loved these songs, a lot of people hated them. A lot of the criticism was aimed at the record companies. Like, the famed ethnomusicologist Alan Lomax was like, the record companies, quote, encouraged their singers to produce cheap novelty blues. The sillier, the better. Which in his eyes overshadowed, quote, the poignant and often profound poetry of the earlier country blues. But I think this is dumb because obviously vulgar and racy songs can be poetic and have meaning, okay? These were very clever songs. Also, his criticism of the record companies takes away the agency of the black artists who were making the songs. Like, the hokum blues and these, like, dirty blues tunes, they were very subversive, you know? It was going against the white establishment that expected black people to behave a certain way. Stupid Alan Lomax. And it's also kind of funny because, like, Thomas Dorsey, who wrote some of these dirty songs, he was actually a Baptist, and in the 20s, While writing these popular blues tracks, he was also becoming involved in music of the church. He coined the term gospel music and would sell sheet music with gospel songs he had written. But unfortunately, this is really sad, but in the 1930s, his wife and his child died within 24 hours of each other. That inspired him to write his most famous gospel song, which is "Take My Hand, Precious Lord." And in the decades after, he became an influential music publisher and would eventually be recognized as the father of gospel music. And now Lucille Bogan's legacy, though, it's taken a longer time to acknowledge. And maybe that's because her music wasn't as marketable, kind of like this show. You know, another one of her songs, here are the lyrics. "I told him I got a cock, and it's got four damn good names. Rough top, rough cock, tough cock, cock without a bone. You can fuck my cock, suck my cock, or leave my cock alone." But also, it might have taken longer to recognize her because when she first started recording, it was under her real name, Lucille Bogan. But in 1933, when she went to New York, she began recording as Bessie Jackson. And she managed to lay down over 100 tracks in just 2 years. And it was in 1935, during her final recording session, that she recorded "Till the Cows Come Home" and those two takes of "Shave 'Em Dry." Unfortunately, ARC didn't renew her contract, so she didn't record anymore after that. She died in August 1948. Even though she never achieved the name recognition that she deserves, we gotta appreciate her body blues. So at the end of this episode, to really put you in the mood for Valentine's Day, let's have another reading of her lyrics. "Now your nuts hang down like a damn bell sapper, and your dick stands up like a steeple. Your goddamn asshole stands open like a church door, and the crabs walk in like people. Ha shit, shucks, ooh." And as always, we learn a lesson from American filth. And I think the lesson we learned today is that throughout the century, throughout the years, people want to fuck. All right, happy Valentine's Day, everyone. American Filth is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcast. I'm Gabby Watts. This episode was written by Amelia Brock. She's also the senior producer. Our executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Elsie Crowley, and Brandon Barr. You can follow the podcast on Instagram at American Filth Pod. Theme song is also by me and Jesse Neiswanger. Please leave a review. Give it 5 stars. I hope you guys have a good day. Happy Valentine's Day. Bye. School of Humans.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Do you love fashion? Do you love getting compliments on how well you're dressed? Are you always seeking the latest trends? Then we're talking to you. BostonProper.com is your fashion destination and the only place to go for all those nods, head turns, and new styles. No matter the day, season, or occasion, Boston Proper has what you're looking for. Sophisticated, confident clothing designed to flatter and get noticed. So visit BostonProper.com now and start creating your perfect wardrobe. Boston Proper. Wear it like no one else.